104.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
A jam-packed show on this Wednesday edition. The crew is all here. Looking at Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet, Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed, for the first time we can see him in Nashville, making the show happen for us. He is the chairman of the board. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning. What's prompted this change, Reed, where we get to see you?
Just the ingenuity of one Jonathan Schaefer making this all possible.
That's lovely. Very nice. Nice to see your beautiful face.
Now, don't be taking any unflattering photos of me, Paul.
Your chins are kind of like... It's a very poor angle.
Yes, Reed's angle is much better than what we see from Paul, though. Notice how Reed has a distance from the camera where we're not right up inside of his nose the entire time, which is much better. By the way, also, Jonathan Schaefer always serves as sort of this hovering presence over our broadcast because it's his profile photo that's in the top of all of our screens at all times because that's the group that he created.
Once again, Chad, just going to completely ignore the fact that of all of the positions that we're in, his pornographic stance here just goes without mention.
I haven't had a single problem with a photo taken of me this whole time.
Yours is the disturbing positioning of anyone here.
I'm not the one getting upset over photos taken of me. You can take any photo you want. I look just fine. No issues over here.
Terrific. Okay, a show announcement to begin.
Yes.
Today is
April 1.
We do not participate in nonsense. We don't have Arbor Day shows. We don't have St. Patrick's Day shows. We don't have, what was the most recent one where we had to make an announcement? President's Day. We don't do what athlete is most presidential, what sporting figure would make the best president. And certainly we don't participate in April Fool's Day. We never have. We never will. Certainly during COVID-19, we've had plenty of laughs. But we're not going to give you an April Fool's. We've got the all clear to go out. Let's go drink margaritas or dumb stuff like that you might hear elsewhere. Everything you hear on this show is going to be straightforward and true. We're not going to play any tricks. The Kuharski family might have told Simon when he woke up this morning that school was open and he would be going in at noon, which we quickly said was April Fool's, and which added to his typical morning misery because he hates mornings. But we're not doing that as a show. That is not our thing. That is not our shtick. And as far as I'm concerned, April Fool's is just that, a thing for children, like Halloween.
Paul, very well said. And it was alarming to wake up this morning to Evie coming into my bathroom as I was brushing my teeth and saying, "Hey, Dad, guess what? Lucy's still asleep right now," which is usually up much earlier than that. I said, "Oh, really? She's still in her crib?" And she said April Fool's to me. So there was a child also that tried to pull an April Fool's joke on me. And then she wanted to pull one on her grandparents. So I called my mom, and she told her that she was going back to school tomorrow because she's in private school. Even though public schools can't go back, they're going to start school back tomorrow with her school. And she did, in fact, fool my mom. That is the extent of all April Fool's jokes that will happen on this show today, though. That of Simon and Evie and children everywhere. That's where it ends.
This has been a show edict from the beginning of the show in 2012. This is not just because it's 2020 and we're sitting at home for coronavirus. But the story that comes to mind for me, and Reed may remember this, there was a DJ named Mo, and he was like on 102.9 or something, the rock station. And we were playing it at the rec center in Murfreesboro at MTSU one night, and this was March 31st. So his on-air slot was from like 8 p.m. to midnight on March 31st. So at 8 o'clock, he comes on and says, "Eddie Vedder has died." And people are losing their minds.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when he signs off at midnight, he yells April Fool's. But like, people were calling the station. They're running up to the desk. And we're just sitting there going, we haven't heard this. You're searching online. There's nothing. But yet there are reports mentioning him. I think he was fired because of it. But and rightfully so. But everybody was losing their minds over Eddie Vedder die. And he would be very descriptive as, quote unquote, reports came in on how he died.
Yeah, it's just so stupid to say something that's completely believable and then say, oh, I got you. Like, I could say, I've got the virus. I got you. Well, it's completely believable. So that's why it's such a dumb holiday. And holidays also is a completely ridiculous word. But if you trick somebody into believing something that's entirely believable, I don't understand how that's a thing.
Also, it's not April Fool's people with death announcements.
Right?
It isn't that below board to announce that anyone has died? Hey, April Fool's. Hey, guys, I'm dying. Just wanted to let you know that. Oh, April Fool's, I got you. Come on.
I could tell you a stupid story without it being April 1st. Here's one. Last night, we go through a ritual where the dog goes out for his last time. Then once the dog's in.
The Green Mile.
We lock the locks. We lock the locks and we turn on the alarm. And then Simon always asks, oftentimes increasingly, he walks through the locking of the locks and the turning on the alarm. So he's a participant because he always asks, sometimes multiple times. So he tried to get the dog in at one point and the dog didn't come in. Then somehow there was some confusion as to whether the dog was in. I think part of it, frankly, was connected to the fact that Teresa was wearing some pants that had a zipper that hit the ground in a way that sounded like the dog walking his nails on the floor. So I was confused. So we were upstairs watching a Jackie Robinson movie. Not the most uplifting. We've decided we need to watch uplifting films now. We've watched a couple depressing films. But so we're upstairs and I'm asked if the dog is in and I say the dog is in. And then we discuss how the dog outside barking sounds a lot like Finley. There's a dog outside barking that sounds a lot like Finley. And then we watch another 20 minutes of the movie and then we hear this dog again. Sounds an awful lot like Finley. Finally, we're like, are we sure that the dog is inside? I'd call him and there's no sign of him. And Teresa comes downstairs and surely let's our dog in. So I had failed at actually identifying that the dog was in. Then this morning she comes down, lets the dog out. And she goes, hey, here's our dog. Do you recognize him? The one that wasn't in the house last night. I'm letting him out now. Maybe you'll let him in 5 minutes or so. He likes to come back in the house and have his greenie and everything. And I'm like, it's amazing the things that we choose to remember in this house, considering how much we forget. Surely this one will pass and we'll just forget about it.
What was his mood like whenever he finally got inside?
He did what he always does. He came up, got on his pillow, and went to bed.
Normal day.
And I'm sure tonight for family movie night, Paul and his family will be watching Contagion as their next uplifting film during this time.
I'm accepting uplifting movie suggestions for a family with a 10-year-old. Please tweet me at Paul Kuhersky NFL.
We went over the options not to go with. It's not Jerry Maguire. It's not whatever Reed mentioned.
It's not Spit on My Grave, one or two, any of the sequels.
I'm not looking for a movie that tests the boundaries of what's appropriate for a 10-year-old to watch with his parents. Major shagging discussions like they were in Bend It with Bend It Like Beckham.
Hutton, did you finish Ozark?
No, I have 3 episodes left.
Come on.
I have one left. I'll finish it tonight. We intentionally saved the finale for tonight. Watched 2 of them last night, so I'm on episode 10. So I will be done by tomorrow's show.
Here's how great Ozark is. Joe Rexroad tweeted out that he finished it, and he's like, it raised the bar. Phenomenal TV outside of just a brutal sequence in episode 5. And so I texted him, like, was it this? And he said, no. And I'm like, was it this? I don't even remember what the sequence was. Was it this?
I
and
he's think like, I know what he's talking
he's
about.
Like, no. And I'm like, was it this? And he's like,
very
no.
Sequence.
I took like 3 guesses before he told me what the painful sequence was. And I was like, oh, that's not even that bad. So, I mean, I'll tell you guys off air so I don't spoil anything. But then he was like, I'm gonna regularly tweet you pictures of it since you think it's no big deal. I think it was incredibly disturbing. In the context of Ozark, it was nothing.
Let me give a guess. It's a love scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought there was a castration scene that was more disturbing than that, I thought.
Look at Reed's face. He's like, what are you guys talking about?
Reed's like, castration scene. I need to get in on this show. This is my type of show.
Lindsay had just texted me, we need to watch Ozark season 3. And then Paul mentions that. And I'm like, no, I'm out.
It was a painful scene. Let's put it
that wasn't
way.
It wasn't a human.
It was not. Coming up today, Doug Matthews, man. He'll be on the show in about 5 minutes. We'll discuss seniors getting another year of eligibility for spring sports across the NCAA. The money involved behind it. We're looking forward to chatting with Doug Matthews in 5 minutes. The reason Doug's on in the 10 o'clock hour today is because Vanderbilt University Medical Center's specialist for infectious diseases, Dr. Bill Schaffner, world-renowned infectious disease specialist. He's been on the show 2 times previous, and he joins us again today at 11:15, taking your questions that you want answered about COVID-19 and the pandemic globally and right here locally in our state. You can join him by using the hashtag Dr. Bill. We'll read questions to him from 11:15 to 11:45. Always an informative segment. The best information you're going to get on this is with Dr. Bill Schaffner at 11:15. Greg Cosell today at 12:15, defensive lineman. Maybe we'll get to some linebackers, but mainly interior defensive linemen will be the focus today. Plus, we'll ask him about the Titans' newest addition, Paul, defensive lineman Jack Crawford. To be honest, I had to look him up. I had not heard of him.
He's Austin Johnson. Nobody outside of Nashville had heard of Austin Johnson, and nobody outside of Atlanta had heard of this guy.
Started for Atlanta 2 years ago, surprisingly. 16 career sacks, 21 tackles for loss. A depth guy, as Paul was mentioning. We'll get Greg's assessment of him coming up. That's at 12:15 plus the draft. And we'll hear from John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, where Paul will attempt to glean information from both today during conference calls.
I mean, the bar is very low. Everybody's excited that we'll have something. But, you know, look, we would have heard from them at the owners' meetings, at least Vrabel, in the last couple days. The league has asked teams to make guys available, and so the Titans are graciously doing so. And collectively, we'll do the best we can, and we're grateful that they're making the guys available. I would hope that they would loosen up a little bit, but you know where I register on the doubt meter.
Nonetheless, we'll hear how they're handling not being able to access their facility as they prepare for the draft, which is 4 weeks from tomorrow.
Maybe so, we will. Or maybe Robinson will say, you know, I don't know. It's difficult, but can't really share anything. He'll field the question.
Well, we'll see what he has to say. That's coming up at 1 o'clock and then again at 1:30. John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. When we come back, Doug Matthews, the latest college football SEC Tennessee discussion. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Mornings, wake up with Mark, Lane, and Kevin. Now, back to the Midday 180 on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Chad, you are headed to Edley's after the show today, is that right?
I am indeed. I will be ordering up, and I saw that they put this on Instagram last night. I'm going to order up one of their lasagnas that they've made. It's a take-and-bake lasagna with brisket in it. They have brisket, pork, chicken, different options for a lasagna that they're making
for
the carryout. So I'm going to do this, take it back, and we'll bake it, heat it up tonight for the entire family. So for $20, you can get that lasagna. So I will be placing an order on the Edley's app, which they do have an app where you can order.
And we tweeted out the details on how you can download the app, and we'll retweet those again right now, where if you have the Droid or the iPhone, however you download your apps for your phone, we'll send that out, and that's how you can pick up curbside pickup and order that through the Edley's app today. Doug Matthews joins us. Nice enough to rearrange the schedule a bit so we can talk with Dr. Bill Schaffner today at 11:15. Doug, as always, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Drunk you makes bad decisions, so make a plan before you party. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. Doug, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Hope you all are. Sounds like you're all doing well.
We are. Thank you for asking. And yeah, it's been a tough week or so, but it's tough on everybody right now. I hope you and your family doing well on that end too. Look, sports news goes on. Sports may not be playing, but there's plenty of news involving COVID-19 and the pandemic and how it's affected the NCAA. Seniors are receiving an extra year of eligibility for spring sports across the board. What did you think of the NCAA's decision? Fair?
I thought it was more than fair. And when you really look at it, it's not nearly as costly as one would think. Remember, almost all the spring sports now, this covers any sport that is a true spring sport. Basketball, of course, they're not going to – anything that was in the fall and the spring that you had a crossover, if the majority of your season – and I think basketball, both women's and men's, the only two sports that are affected by that, they're not extending anything on that. But all the spring sports, they are. But, you know, when you look at it, and I – this kind of made me go back and look and pull up exactly – what spring sports scholarship limits are, there's very few, if any, athletes in the spring sports that are on full scholarship. For instance, let's just go baseball. Baseball gets 11.7 scholarships, total scholarships. Spring sports, unlike men's and basketball and football, you cannot have split scholarships in men's football, well, men's basketball and football. If you're on scholarship there, it has to be a full scholarship. However, all of the spring sports, you're allowed to split those up. You can take a full scholarship, give somebody books, get somebody tuition, get somebody a room, give somebody board. So you can split those up. And so you're really not talking about a whole lot. When you look at this, the other part of this that's interesting is, and you had to kind of dig down and look at this, any senior that wants to come back, it has to be a senior, fourth year of eligibility, any senior that wants to come back can, but here's a couple of caveats in there. Number one, if you keep them on scholarship, and keep them on the scholarship they had, it cannot be any larger amount than they were receiving in 2019-2020. But here's the other interesting caveat in there, guys. You can agree to bring Doug Matthews back. He may be getting books and board, but when room and board or any other partial, but you don't have to give him that. So I'm sure many of these athletes, if they decide to come back, are going to come back, but they're probably not going to get any aid at all. So it's not really a huge step. Nice that they did it. Not really a huge step, though, by the NCAA. And one other final thing on this, the other pretty neat thing about this, and I think this is NCAA learning from the transfer portal and the waiver situation. The universities have full control. They can bring anybody back they want or not bring them back if they don't want. But again, there's no reason not to bring them back because you can bring them back. They're not going to be on scholarship if you don't want them to, and they have to pay their own way. So actually, it's a pretty good deal for the NCAA. Good PR and not really many out-of-pocket expenses.
Yeah, I don't even think it's – I mean, I guess it's great PR on its face. I mean, I would think a low percentage of kids are actually going to be able to come back. They're, like you said, very few are going to get an offer of even what they had. And then they got to find classes to take. They got to get – most of them, you would presume, are done with school. They got to get into graduate school, right, to find something to take. This is a lot of window dressing stuff here. Then you got to make it through a semester to get to your season. Then the coach has to want you back. There might be a couple stars he wants back, but he's also got a class coming in and a lot of kids. They're going to be victims here who were in the pipeline maybe to step up, and all of a sudden their team now has more guys than the coach was accounting for. It's messy.
Well, it is. Now, one other thing, too, on that, Paul, they are also extending or eliminating. There are no roster limits now. If you had a roster, say, of 25 in baseball or whatever it is, now you, that can be extended as far as you want it. I would think exactly what you said. Most of the spring sport athletes, well, most athletes, period, by the time they get to their senior year or have graduated, many of them have graduated before or by the end of their senior year. So academically, Probably that's true. I think you're exactly right there. The one I would think that probably the athletes in the sports where you can you know, go pro or Olympic type sports where you're training for that, they would probably want to come back. I would doubt that very, very few though athletes are coming back, because again, I don't know of any. I'm sure there are a few. I don't know of any spring sport athlete that's on full scholarship because of the scholarship limitations.
And Doug, as we know, when you're forced to rush things through, and look, they made the decision they had to make here, but there are always things that they probably didn't consider, and they'll look back on and find a few things along the way as this progresses. But they had to make a decision for these kids.
They did, and I'll say this: it was primarily the athletes themselves that were pushing for this, and got it through, you know, without having to go through committee after committee after committee. Got it right in front of the NCAA panel, and they approved it. Again, nice gesture, decent PR, as Paul said, but really not much to this at all.
We're talking about spring sports and some of the things going on with that. When we come back, I'm going to ask Coach about the possibility of no college football season and what that would mean, the ramifications for a lot of these spring non-revenue sports and other non-revenue sports, if that revenue doesn't take place in college football this year.
Doug Matthews with us. He's presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Drunk driving is the ultimate form of unsportsmanlike conduct. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. More college football discussion coming up with Doug Matthews, but first, a word from Coach.
Let me talk a little about StroudsDelivery.com. Now, you know from listening to the shows over the years that you're just a pooch bun away from a Stroud store. Well, now you're even closer than that. They'll bring it right to your doorstep if you want. StroudsDelivery.com, that's the website. You go on there, hit the location tab, that will bring up the menu. Click on what you want, give your payment information, give your address. They will tell you then exactly when you can expect that delivery at your front door. If you want to leave it outside, fine. If you want them to hit the doorbell or knock on the door and hand it to you, that's fine also. Remember, StroudsDelivery.com, and you're still just a pooch punt away from a Stroud store.
As we stay in place, we're giving you sports, the sports station. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Doug Matthews with us on the road. He's always presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. There's no need to consult the playbook. The winning play is to always designate a sober driver. Fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Doug, we know that in a lot of schools and a lot of cases, college football pays for a lot of other non-revenue sports. If this COVID-19 thing continues and we lose a football season, let's say, in college football, how damaging could that be for a lot of these non-revenue sports at different schools?
Well, you're looking at I don't want to call it a disaster. That would be too strong. But Every sport up there, every sport in every university is funded. Men's basketball would be another one, but men's football and men's basketball and football fund them all. And of course, the great majority of that definitely comes from from football. And listen, these are huge amounts of money. We saw the money, the millions of dollars that was lost to the university's athletic departments because of the basketball tournament. That was just the NCAA basketball tournament being canceled, millions of dollars. So many of these universities are going to be in bad shape. There are very few. I'm going to talk about this Saturday with Tony Barnhart. There are very few universities who have a rainy day fund enough to handle this. Let's just take Tennessee, for example. Their rainy day fund is well under $5 million. That's not going to do hardly anything. Now, certainly there's other ways universities will work with this, but I'd say by and large, there's going to be major consequences of that happen. Now, hopefully it's not going to get there, but if it does, you're looking at billions of dollars to the Power Five conferences in particular.
And, Doug, let's go a step further with Tennessee in particular. We're going to see athletic departments across the country take hits with this. The departments that have been, you know, in place and had good leadership, they'll be fine. The ones that have low reserves are going to feel the pain. And that's not just any conference that's not a Power 5 school. Tennessee, for instance, they're paying football and basketball buyouts. You have the numbers on what they're spending on coaches' buyouts.
This is fascinating to me, and if you like to dig into minutiae of things like I do, I have a lot of time like most of us sports fans do. This is put out by the College Sports Associates, their executive search and consulting. It's collegesportsassociates.com. And just think about this. What it does, it talks about the payouts for coaches for football and basketball. University of Tennessee is number one over a 15-year period of payouts. They are averaging almost $2.9 million of paying out just coaches, and number one by far in football coaches. So kind of interesting. Auburn's number two, by the way, average, but fascinating. And what does all that come about from? It comes about from obviously making mistakes on hires on coaches, and in my opinion, just doing a very poor job of managing from an athletic director's seat. That's why they got a new athletic director out there. They've gone through a bunch of them. Many other universities, some, not many, are having the same problem. But the amounts of money that are paid out in football and basketball severance pay staffs is phenomenal. Just one quick thing, one quick stat on this, and I encourage you to read it. This is just from the 2018 year alone. All right, five of the 52 public schools, the private schools that weren't part of this, spent more than $10 million in severance payments. Think about that. Tennessee in 2018 alone was $11.5 million. Now just let that number sink in a little bit to you. It's a very detailed account, and I encourage you, if you like reading that type of stuff, it's collegesportsassociates.com, and it is excellent.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I'm sure you'll have more on that this weekend on your weekend shows. Chad?
Yeah, Coach, recruiting continues for Tennessee and for every other program out there, and Tennessee was able to land a couple of commitments in the last couple of days, one from someone down in Williamson County, Walker Merrill from Brentwood High School. How difficult of a time is this? And we've talked about the creativity needed in terms of staying on top of recruits and everything else, but maybe it's just a coincidence in timing, but it seems like that Tennessee staff is doing a pretty good job of staying on top of prospects that visited their campus right before this shutdown happened and closing in on some of those prospects. They currently have the second-ranked class for 2021 in the SEC, which is a good thing for Vols fans out there.
Well, I think a couple of things in the universities that did this. Now, these are commitments, and I know other universities have probably done every bit as good a job, athletic departments, football programs, that'll be coming out later. But they got a lot of players in early. A lot of these players, particularly in state, were up as junior prospects a year ago. Their families have been up before all this, the shutdown occurred on it. One interesting thing about the Merrill youngster, again, I don't talk much at all about prospect, but he's here in Brentwood. I actually coached his younger brother, who is a 14-year-old, and with my grandson in T-ball baseball about 10 years ago. So, and I watched him play. He's fast, a great athlete. And something I like seeing, again, I'll discuss this more Sunday. Tennessee is now back recruiting in-state athletes. Last year, Tennessee signed 10 football players from the state of Tennessee. That was more in many, 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 many years. And I think they're continuing that. They got some of their best recruiters in staff. T. Martin, in particular, is recruiting the Middle Tennessee area now, and I think doing an excellent job.
Doug, final thing for you. The four new coaches in the SEC, you mentioned the severance, and I can't help but think that these schools are going to have tough decisions and judgments based on how these coaches get off to their start because of this unusual offseason. They're in a world of hurt with the four new coaches, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Missouri, Mississippi State. Can you begin to imagine what they're up against with the offseason changes they're having to adjust to immediately?
Well, it's a double whammy for three of those four schools. Four, of course, Mississippi, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Arkansas, and Missouri. Mississippi State was the only one that they fired their coach after national signing date. So the other three, again, it's a double whammy for them. They had a very small class because there just weren't that many athletes, football players out there remaining. You know, they got the job roughly the 1st of December. National signing date was around the 20th, so they had a little under 3 weeks to put a staff together, get recruiting going and all of that. They get hit with that, and then they're not going to have a spring practice to put their system in. There's four schools with brand new coaches. Then there's two more schools, Tennessee and Florida, are going into their third year, so they're pretty much established. And then every other school is the program is four or more. All their coaches have been in place. So that's certainly an advantage, and those coaches are going to have to be very cognizant and what I call using excellent judgment. They're not going to be able to put their whole system in now. They're going to have to decide what can we go into a year with. Regardless of how much time, and there will be some extended practice time, no doubt, from the roughly month that you get because of lack of spring. But it's not going to be, you can't go into pads and you won't be able to do some things like that. So they're really going to have to be very innovative and very smart and use excellent judgment in exactly what they think those players that they have can run and can execute.
What do you have coming up this weekend, Coach?
Well, Saturday with Tony, we're going to dig into a lot. Tony is very tuned in to the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, which puts you in contact with the other commissioners. There is so much time now, much more interaction between athletic directors. Every single day in this conference, I'm sure in the others too, but in the Southeastern Conference, athletic directors have a video meeting every single day. There are so many issues that are facing them. And much like all of us are and every business is with what's going on from the virus, you don't know. So you have to, there's got to be a lot of planning. Some of it will never come to fruition. Other parts of it will. So athletic directors right now are earning their money, believe me.
Doug, thank you as always, and we will catch up again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. He joins us each Wednesday here on the show. Greg Cosell's coming up. Plus, we have Dr. Bill Schaffner. Guys, today is April 1st. Paul put out the April Fool's edict for us. No tricks or games being played on this show. But you better believe Kirby has a story involving April Fool's. He sent me a text, and he would like to join us from his man shed coming up.
He's a fool every day, not just April 1st, not just April, every month, every day. We
Dad,
heard
are
it
you in?
With the unbelievable giraffe story, and we'll hear it again. I'm in.
Chad is in as well.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I cannot wait. Anytime. You don't have to ask me. You say Kirby, I'm all in. I don't need any other sales pitch at all. I'm ready to go whenever Kirby's name is uttered.
Well, I thought Chad froze up like Mark Howard this morning whenever they paused briefly because there was a glitch on Skype.
That was 3 seconds of silence. I'm trying to reach 15 seconds of silence.
Yeah, you are.
We want to hit that emergency switch.
You got
where
8 seconds. You got 8 seconds to spare. Easy.
Kirby Allen Kirby with his April Fool's story next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Break down the latest odds from Vegas with Todd Furman. Presented by Mark Spain Real Estate. Wednesday afternoons at 5:15 on 104.5 The Zone.
Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. The crew is all here and joined by Kirby Allen Kirby, who went outside to his man shed, cigarette in the mouth, and he's about to tell us about his great... You just lit the cigarette, gentlemen. It's official. About to tell us about April 1st, 1982. Kirby, what happened?
Well, I was working at a Domino's in Cookeville at the time, and of course we would get off work at 1 or 2 in the morning, and I would normally get in bed about the time the sun came up, which was the case on April 1st, 1982. And of course, other coworkers who weren't ready to go to bed liked to make phone calls at 8 or 9 in the morning and tell you that the store was unlocked or that you were scheduled for day shift. To make you, you know, I mean, just to get a rise. And I had gone through 2 or 3 of those when around 10 in the morning, my girlfriend called and I answered the phone and she said,
"Booty call."
No. Not quite, although it did get hot. She calls to tell me that I need to get up and get over to my cousin's house immediately. His house is on fire. He's just been pulled out of a class.
Always fire.
And there was a house fire. And so my response was, yeah, nice try. April Fool's Day to you too, click. And went back to sleep. About 10 seconds later, my phone rang again, at which point she said, "Listen, a-hole, your cousin's house is burning down. You need to get your butt out of bed and get over there." And so at this point, I took her seriously. And sure enough, their house had was on fire. And the place, you know, was saved, although lots of damage. They were displaced for about a year.
Can you give us a history of all the Kirby family fires?
Two.
No, come my on. Aunt, really think my, back.
Two actual fires, one fake fire is what we're running now.
Well, okay. Well, here's an interesting thing. When we were children, and I mean real little, there was this enormous Victorian four-story home on a lot between my grandparents' home and my aunt's house up the street. And one Saturday morning in the wintertime, that house caught on fire. And it burnt literally to the ground over a period of about 10 hours. And like my grandparents were making, had this big coffee urn, and they were making sandwiches and stuff for the firemen that were desperately trying to save what they could. And we all sat on this, just to tell you how young we were, four of us, sat on the top of my grandfather's desk and watched out this window as this, which were two, one of my classmates' home burnt down in complete and utter awe. But anyway, that wasn't a person, I mean, a house member. Then my aunt's house in 1982 burnt down, and then, of course, ours.
And that's where the spark of an arson started, was at that moment when you were in awe of the house burning down that you were watching.
Yeah, this is exactly what I thought. I don't know if you guys are like me, but you know how the books that let you kind of choose the path that it goes. So Kirby says, one Saturday, there's a Victorian house between my grandpappy and my aunt. And one Saturday morning in the wintertime, and I stop hearing what he's saying, and I hear my cousins and I decided to burn it down.
No, I was probably, I think I was in either kindergarten or first grade. No, had nothing to do with that. Had nothing to do with any starting any fires at any point in my life other than campfires and in the fireplace.
All right, Kirby, we're going to do this each time you join us, if you don't mind. Turn around and Paul, you have one more thing?
Yeah. What's the biggest fire you've ever lit?
Oh.
Bonfire for a homecoming thing in high school, maybe. One year I got to throw the torch thing onto the
which
stack
is
of
like
lumber.
A Texas A&M size bonfire.
Oh yeah, we had a lumber yard or a sawmill basically deliver us a truckload of the trimmings off logs that was stacked about as high as the goalpost, just outside of the end zone, and we set that dude ablaze one.
How long did that burn?
Went up rather quick, probably within about 2 hours. It was down to just a pile of smoldering coals. But
was anyone still accidentally set afire? Did they singe their eyebrows? Anything like this?
No, nothing like that occurred.
Behind you, damn, you have a wall of trinkets. You have credentials, a big collection of credentials. I saw some bobbleheads back there the other day. Yeah. What's on the shelf? Pick something off the shelf and tell us why it's meaningful for you and why you have it in your man
cave.
This
is our first installment of Kirby Shows Us Something.
Show and tell.
You guys had referenced the credentials, and as you know, I collect, I keep every credential that has ever been issued to me as a memento. And the other thing, I guess, I'll start with this one.
Dang, it is yours.
Here's a picture of my grandfather.
Hold that up so we can see him.
Don't go sentimental. I want to make fun of it.
No, well, you can if you want. He was a crusty old dude. But I keep this where
hold it up.
Curry's still not knowing how a camera works in terms of how he can't see himself on the screen. There we go.
It does look like a CD.
So I keep this in any room that wherever I've been since, I guess, my mid 20s. If I've got a room that is my drafting room or my art room or my workshop or whatever, this photograph stays with it. It goes to that room.
That's your grandfather?
That's my grandfather.
If you're out there and you're imagining this photo, so are we. We can't see it at all.
Hold on. I'll take this out. It's an old snapshot of it.
Yes, we can.
And that was a time where we were all meeting at one of my aunt's homes. And I just happened to be taking pictures of everybody. And he turned around with his typical grin, this little wily grin on his face, and he used always continually get on to me as a kid about putting stuff back where it belonged, knowing where it was. And if I didn't put anything back, he would lock me out of the tool shed, or he would lock, I mean, literally, he would just exile me from whatever it was that I wasn't taking
care
of.
That's what I'd try every time we're on the road, lock you out.
But and I'm, although you wouldn't know it now because of the way I described the shop is so full of other stuff that isn't shop stuff that's out here as a collection point because of the damage that we've got done. But I keep his photograph wherever I'm working so that he is always over my shoulder. And if anything, whatever, I need inspiration, I can take a look at him. But I also, it's kind of like, see, I keep, look, you'd be proud of this. Everything's got a place. I could come in here in the middle of the night in the dark, and I could find whatever it was that I was looking for.
He must have been very proud when you took your multi-purpose knife through airport security. What did you call him? What did you call him? Grandpappy?
Grandpa.
Pap?
Grandpa.
I approve of that. That's what everybody should call their grandfather.
Grandpa. I mean, I kind of, you know, over the years, it started out with Grandpa, I'm sure, and then, or whatever, but we... And I used to be teased by cousins because they would say grandpa and I said grandpa, and it was just,
what's the significance of the golf ball behind you?
Which one? This one?
Yeah, that was a six putt over at Hermitage.
Oh, it's a sleeve of golf balls.
These are a sleeve of golf balls that I've gotten from each of the last three Super Bowls when they started putting the Super Bowl logo on golf balls at the shop. So.
He plans on using those for the front six next time he plays.
No, those aren't going to be played with. Those aren't to be played with. You'll notice, like, I've got...
Don't play with those or the trolobites. They're more of a display.
These balls are not to be played with.
The other thing, weird thing that I do is if I've got, like, these little plastic aquariums, like things like you might put a goldfish in. Because the kids had gold...
You're fine. Kirby does.
Well, no, at one point they had residents who are no longer with us.
Yep.
So I'd stuck them in a box. And so... I find golf balls. Sometimes you're looking for your golf ball. One might be off the fairway or whatever. If I come across one that has a logo on it of some sort, I keep them. I just throw it in the bag, rinse them off. And so I've got one aquarium full of golf balls that I've found out playing golf, and another aquarium full of golf balls of courses that I have played.
Okay.
And so I keep, like, if I play a course and I really like it, I go in, and if they've got in their pro shop a golf ball with their logo, I'll purchase one, and then I keep these. And I have a surplus of balls versus the aquariums needed to put them in some, you know, you throw a little sand in there, maybe, like like a fake plastic bush, and I stack them up to the very top, and then I used a broken golf club as a kind of a lid.
Interestingly, there's another man who has filled up a lake with Kirby's lost golf ball. That's his hobby.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Kirby, thank you for joining us. Next week, or actually, I take that back. It'll be later this week. We'll get back to the truth, reliving the truth, retelling the past to entertain the present. Sure. With some of your truth, according to Kirby's.
You've given us so much to unpack. It's really I don't know if we could get through it all.
And there's so much behind you that we can, that has a story with everything. Those Dallas Cowboys, I see the Dallas Cowboys stars and everything else. So we'll get to that coming up. And
that was a great acquisition. That was a true Kirby-ism. Yeah.
Kirby, thank you, man.
You're welcome, Wes. Be good.
Be well. Kirby Allen Kirby has been our guest. He is the gift that keeps on giving. He is turning off the spotlight.
Now he's sitting in the dark.
Irrigation light. He's now sitting in the dark. The only light is the glare from the computer screen off of his glasses.
And now that's off.
Yeah, now he's turned his computer off completely. What a gift. He's
sitting in the dark.
There he is lighting a cigarette as he goes off into the distance.
See you, boys.
Return. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.